Hey everyone, welcome into another Pipeline podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. The MLB Pipeline Top 100 prospect list is out, and we will spend most of this podcast breaking it down from some different angles. You guys had the show on MLB Network on Saturday night unveiling it, and we'll get into the reactions you guys have gotten as well. We'll do it from a team perspective and players as well. But when you're doing a top 100 list, I think you got to start at the top of it, and that is number one. And number one on this list is Andrew Benintendi. But my question for you guys is, and this is something we've talked about a little bit, how tough was that decision to make it Andrew Benintendi, who's one, over Yoan Moncada, who's two? Gleyber Torres is number three. Jonathan, you can kick things off.
You know, I think that there's not a whole lot separating the three of them. Maybe I put Benintendi and Moncada 1 and 1A, and Torres is a slight half a step behind, but very slight. And to me, in the end, Benintendi was the best choice because just the combination of the tools that he has, the ceiling that he has, and the likelihood that he'll reach that ceiling.
Jim?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, I think Moncada's ceiling is maybe a little bit higher than Benintendi's, but you feel better about Benintendi's bat than you do about Moncada's. And I do think Moncada gets kind of unfairly dinged for his rough big league performance last year. But, I mean, the fact that Benintendi walked into the big leagues and was good offensively and defensively from day one, and, I mean, he's going to hit for average, he's going to hit for power, he could probably steal 20 bases a year, he could play center field if he was on a different team. I think he's got – well, I do think Moncada probably has the highest ceiling. I do think Benintendi has the highest floor and the best combination of floor and ceiling of anybody in the top 100, so I think he's a very worthy choice.
All right, so those are number, you know, your top three overall. When you look at the list, Benintendi's not going to be there for long, right? What does he need? Less than a week's worth of at-bats, right, before he will have to move on, and then Yoan Moncada, you would assume, takes over that top spot?
Correct.
All right, how about risers? Because there's some real big ones in this. We don't always see the huge leap from one year to the next, but there's a couple that I wanted to talk to you guys about who have really leapt up the chart. One who was already on the list and is now in the top five. That's Amed Rosario, Mets shortstop, I believe number 79 a year ago in the top 100 when you guys unveiled it, and now he's number five. So a 74-spot leap for a guy who now has definitely, for pretty much everyone's opinion, right, the future of the middle infielder as far as the Mets go. Go, Jonathan.
Okay. and the Mets are my list, so it makes sense. But yeah, I mean, he, as much as we love Gleyber Torres, and he's the top shortstop, Rosario's not that far behind him. Torres has more thump in his bat. I'll probably have more power. They both can really hit. Rosario's a better defender, better runner. It's funny to me because in some ways I think Rosario, even with the huge leap and the fact that he's in New York, is almost a little underrated as a prospect. You don't hear his name being mentioned as like elite level prospect. And he's always been ridiculously young for his level. And last year was the first year that the numbers caught up with what his potential is going to be. And I think he's just going to keep doing that. And, you know, he'll be ready for New York at some point this year. Whether he's just as an understudy for a little while, but he'll be ready certainly to take over full time by 2018.
Jim, jump in on that if you'd like.
No, I mean, I think that's all fair. You know, it is kind of, I agree with Jonathan, kind of one of the interesting aspects about it is how much hype Torres has gotten and how little comparative hype Amed Rosario has gotten. And Amed Rosario has played 2 months in Double-A and hit 340. And had, you know, if you would think, you know, even people just, sometimes I think people get caught up too much in the numbers, but if you just looked at the numbers, Rosario had a better year than Torres did and got further along in the minor leagues, but you don't hear nearly as much about Amed Rosario as you do about Gleyber Torres.
Pretty neat to think about maybe a couple of years from now and the city of New York with Torres in the Bronx And Rosario in Queens for the Mets and Yankees as far as shortstops go. That would be pretty cool. All right, the other big leaper wasn't even on this list a year ago. Cody Bellinger, now number 13 overall, Dodgers first baseman. And, Jim, I know when you talk about Bellinger, you always bring up not just the bat and the power, but the fact that despite the fact that he's a first baseman, he's a tremendous defender.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty exciting cake and pretty exciting icing there, too. I think he's the best power-hitting prospect in the minors. I think he's going to hit for average, too. You look at how he made adjustments last year and really cut his strikeout rate. It's just fun watching him swing the bat. And then, you know, as an added bonus, I mean, this guy is so much more athletic than the typical first baseman. He's close to an average runner. I've had guys tell me he's as good a defensive prospect they've seen at the position in years. And I had another scout tell me that he thought of all the guys in the minor leagues that Cody Bellinger might be the best bet to win a gold glove, which is, you don't hear that about first base too often, or about a first baseman too often. That's how far ahead of the field he is. And even beyond that, I think he'll long-term be a first baseman, but I think he'd be at least an average corner outfielder, and he can, you know, he can play a capable center field. I think it would be more of kind of a fill-in basis. I don't think you'd want him there 150 games a year, but he's capable of playing center field too. Jonathan and I both saw him play some center in Arizona Fall League. I'm definitely on the Cody Bellinger bandwagon, and I think he'd definitely be on the short list of guys who could be the number one prospect in baseball when the guys ahead of him start to graduate. Maybe when we do this in midseason, although I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he finds a way to get some regular at-bats with the Dodgers, too.
That'd be interesting.
This is borderline callous prospect crush territory, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if it's quite Dansby Swanson, Andrew Benintendi category, but it's pretty close. It's pretty close.
Right.
I do think if Dan O'Dowd had been on the desk with us for the Top 100 Prospect Show this year, Jonathan, last year he accused me of having the prospect crush on Benintendi. I think he would have been on me about how much I love Cody Bellinger.
Yep.
Jonathan, not quite as high on Bellinger as Jim.
No,
or,
I love Cody
too,
Bellinger.
Right?
I just like giving Jim a hard time.
All right, so there's some big high risers. I mentioned the feedback on Twitter, and obviously you guys always get plenty of comments, and I know you answered a lot of questions as well, which is a great part of this. When fans on there get out there and fire away questions to you guys, you're real good about answering them back. But Jonathan, I think we got to start with a poll on Twitter. Is that right? You were the best dressed guy on MLB Network for the show?
It's huge. Well, it was a two-person poll. Because I really was leaving out Greg Amsinger and Bill Ripken.
I think the Ripken tie might have won. I think Kelly liked Bill Ripken's tie.
Yeah, Ripken's tie was very good. But, you know, they're professional TV guys. That's all they do. So I kind of, I leave Greg and Bill out of it. And so I put up a poll, mostly because I was challenged to do so. And then I think Jim is maybe regretting that at this point, because the early returns, I just put out the question and the first few people liked Jim's suit better. And then he challenged me to put out a poll. So I did. And I won 55-45%. I mean, I wasn't even close. I mean, that's like a clear mandate that I had the superior suit on for the show.
Clearly election fraud and people voting more than once. That's all I have to say. Clearly election fraud. Although I think as the winner of the voting, you're not supposed to claim that. So.
People registered with multiple Twitter accounts? Is that what we're
That's
talking?
Right. And, all right. Boy. I think we should move on from this in a hurry.
All right. Sounds good. How about other than what you guys were wearing? And I know you guys, maybe a new suit for the show. I know you guys dress well for the draft as well. But how about the overall feedback about the prospects? Did people like the list, not like the list? What was the biggest complaints maybe that you heard?
I won't say it's all negativity. I mean, you do have, it seems like the people who are negative scream the loudest. I had a guy this morning who sent me a 7-part tweet about, or I guess only 6 parts were related to how overrated Gleyber Torres is. I mean, so you're going to hear people, screaming on Twitter, but I think for the most part it was well-received. I mean, Jonathan, I can't remember if you said this during the show or during some of the videos we cut for the website, but I rest easy knowing how hard we worked on this and how many people we talked to and how many of these guys we've either seen or gotten multiple opinions on. If I felt like we dashed this off and I wasn't comfortable with the list, I would feel bad. But, like, you can argue these guys. There's no right answer. There's no definitive answer. We won't know how good these guys really are for another 10 years down the road. And I feel like we lined them up pretty good. I mean, we did get a number of compliments as well. I mean, I think probably the angry – I mean, you're always going to hear from people – who, you know, if their team, you know, if a player on their team who could have made it didn't make it, how could you leave that guy off the list? I do think the angriest fan base about the list probably is the Padres, you know, have replaced the Braves as our angriest fan base.
They're so laid back in San Diego. It's hard to believe.
Well, they lost their football team, and now they're angry about the top 100. So
I see. Yeah, you know, I think overall it was – largely positive, and I actually think this year was the first time that I felt more positive vibes than negative ones. But, you know, and I've said this many, many times, that, you know, this is why we put this list together. We don't put it out there thinking it's the be-all, end-all, like the perfect list. It's supposed to stir debate, you know. Preferably civil debate. I would rather not be called an idiot, you know, and worse. But it happens, especially on the immediacy of Twitter or the comments section underneath Prospect Watch, where the rankings are, has become basically a bulletin board. And I guess if imitation is the greatest form of flattery, both Jim and I had to go onto those boards to tell people that someone was imitating us.
Yeah, that was the big, maybe under the radar, big story on the internet right. This week was fake Jim and fake Jonathan on the Pipeline Podcast chat boards.
Right, I'm just I've yet to have someone pretend to be me on Twitter.
Be careful what you wish for.
No, I know. I was like, I don't know if that's a higher form of flattery, but and people get riled up, but I also felt this year that there were a good amount of people who not only, you know, gave us the, hey, good list, really enjoy watching it, and, you know, and then would ask a question about why this guy was here, wasn't there, whatever, but also some of, like, the sort of positive, you know, thoughts shouting down people who were being particularly mean to us. So I appreciated that.
And I will say, too, just to clarify, that these things always do stir debate. But one thing, and I'll speak for Jonathan here, too, because I know he believes the same thing. We don't go crazy trying to throw stuff out there that's going to enrage people or inflame people. And I don't think either of us have ever subscribed to the school of thought, like, hey, here's a new guy. Let's jack him up the list 30 spots so we can claim we were higher on him before anybody else noticed him. I mean, we actually sit there, you know, along with Mike Rosenbaum, who helped put the list together as well. We actually sit there and you know, vote. Okay, this guy's 54. This guy's 55. And then we mash our individual list together, and then discuss them. So while it does create debate, we're not sitting there trying to just throw crazy stuff out there to make people react. And you know, like I said, I mean, I feel pretty good about it. Again, I can't remember what venue you said this on, Jonathan. But knowing how much work we put into the thing, you're never going to have everybody agree with it because, you know, quite frankly, you know, there's probably 20 or 25 guys who just missed, and we have a list of them who could have very easily been on there at 80 to 100 instead of the guys who made it. I mean, at that point, there's not a huge difference. It's kind of, you know, pick your preference there. But no, I don't get too worked up about people getting angry, although I guess I will have to be careful if we travel to San Diego in the near future.
So you mentioned that the Padres replaced the Braves as the or the Padres fan base replaces the Braves fan base as the most angry about the list, and for good reason, because suddenly look at the Braves, 7 players in the top 100. I think they were second as far as prospect points behind the Yankees, who also had 7 players on the list. The White Sox were third with 6 players on the list. So those seem to be the 3 teams that stand out. Obviously, they've all done a lot in the last year or two to add to the systems. But as far as those Braves that now you guys are suddenly making the fans happy, Jonathan, what is it about that system now that and I know that you guys were never hard on the Braves system, but fans like to take it that way. But what do you like the most about that Braves system now?
I mean, we still heard from Braves fans, by the way, who thought there should be 9 of them.
I was going to say the same thing. I mean, there's people.
I'm not going to let them off the hook. And you know what? I'm glad that they are passionate about the farm system. They realize the importance of it as they try to sort of flip the switch and rebuild in Atlanta as they're moving into a new ballpark. But, yeah, so we definitely got a couple of, like, how come Max Fried and Ronald Acuna and Austin Riley and, you know, the list goes on and on. But I think that's, you know, but that speaks to why we think so highly of the Braves system. It's not just the seven guys they have in the top 100, which is plenty, but that there are, you know, a few others who very easily could move on to the list as the season progresses. I just actually had a question on Twitter before we started recording asking, you know, how many Braves could we see on the list come mid-season, and they figure, you know, Dansby Swanson will graduate off in a hurry. I think there's a good chance Ozzie Albies will graduate off by mid-season. But they could easily add 2-3 more, and that doesn't count whoever they might, you know, pick up in the draft, and they've got a high draft pick again. So they could have more than the seven that they have now. It's a really, really deep system. Some of them are kind of far away, especially all this pitching that they've accrued. But if they all take a step forward, then they're going to be the clear-cut cream of the crop.
Jim, the Braves tied with the Yankees for seven, but the Yankees with the more points, and the way you do that is obviously top spot gets, I think, 100, and then second gets 99 and 98, 97. Vice versa, you add them all up. The Yankees were higher there, so they're guys that are in the top 100 ranking a little bit higher, and we've heard a lot about these guys in recent years. You guys already talked about Torres, but how about, we've talked a lot about the hitters, how about the pitchers coming through in that Yankee system?
Well, see, now you're setting it up so that Braves fans are going to be mad at me again. But that's
fine. That was
fine.
My goal.
What's that?
That was what I was going for.
That was
for.
Your goal. Okay, well, good. You're going to be successful here. On one hand, I mean, I totally agree the Braves have a very interesting collection of pitchers. They've gone out and they've tried to amass pitching depth through trades, through the draft, what have you. I mean, Colby Allard, Mike Soroka, Sean Newcomb, Ian Anderson are all in our top 100. Max Fried just missed. Joey Wentz and Kyle Muller got big money out of the draft last year. They just traded for Luis Gohara. Tuki Toussaint has impressive raw stuff. I mean, it's a really impressive group of pitchers. And this is what got me in trouble with Braves fans when I ranked them as the ninth best farm system at the trade deadline, so right around August 1st last year, was that if you look at their pitchers, I feel like I've said this a million times, and I like their pitchers, but there's a lot of attrition with pitchers. In fact, Paul Snyder, who I believe still is connected with the Braves, told me years ago when I started at Baseball America probably 25 years ago, and I've had numerous people repeat this, but basically Paul's philosophy was you need 20 good pitching prospects to find two good pitchers because of the attrition. And as exciting as these Braves pitchers can be, if you look at their ceilings, you got to look at their floors too, and they don't have none of the guys that we just mentioned as, you know, their best pitching prospects, eight or nine names I rattled off, have a clean bill of health, throw strikes, and have pitched above Class A. Now, you know, some of them have two out of three, but there are question marks on all these guys, too. Either, Colby Allard, who's their top-rated pitching prospect, was highly regarded as any high school pitcher in the draft 2 years ago, and his stress reaction is back and missed most of his senior year, and he's not a big physical guy. So at least in the back of your mind, you have to worry, You know, is this guy going to be able to hold up? You know, so far so good, although they've also kept his innings. I think he only pitched about 87 innings last year. You know, Sean Newcomb, who they got in the Anderson Simmons trade, doesn't throw a lot of strikes. Mike Soroka, who's healthy and does throw strikes, hasn't pitched above A-ball yet. And so as much as I like the ceilings on these guys, I just would like to see more before I'm going to jump in that, like, every one of these guys is going to win a Cy Young Award, because it's not going to happen that way. And now Atlanta's mad at me again, I'm sure.
I think they already tweeted. The fans are
and
already
Tim
tweeted.
Asked you about the Yankees. You didn't have to do that.
Yeah, that's true.
It's clearly showing, just clearly showing the bias.
Yeah, you took it in a different direction. That's all right. All right, so the position breakdown here as far as the top 100. There's 42 pitchers. 32 of those are right-handers. 25 outfielders. 11 of those in the top 30. 6 third basemen, 14 shortstops, which is actually down a little bit from a year ago, but still a really impressive list considering the great shortstops who have gone into the major leagues, 4 second basemen, 4 first basemen. So the positions that stand out to me, guys, shortstop, there's a lot of pitchers, but there's one article that mentions on Pipeline.com the fact that there's maybe a decline in the high-end pitching in the minors right now. Jonathan, is that a thing? Is there less of the guys that you think could be aces someday?
I guess you look at the numbers. I remember when Jim and I were doing the, you know, the show on the network, at the very beginning, they show the breakdown of the top 50. And to be honest, I hadn't written the breakdown story yet, so I hadn't even looked that closely at how the numbers played out. So I was a little surprised that the top 50 was 35 position players and 15 pitchers. I'd have to go back and look, but I would be willing to bet that that's the largest, you know, discrepancy of hitters to pitchers, you know, that we've had. I think it's usually more pitcher heavy. And that said, you know, at the very, very top, is it that much different from last year? I mean, you know, Julio Urias has graduated off. You still have Alex Reyes and Tyler Glass now. And Lucas Giolito, maybe his star has faded a tiny bit, but he's still the very top of the list. Those are three hard-throwing frontline guys. You've got guys like Michael Kopech moving up the list in a hurry. So I don't know if it's quite as extreme as maybe the initial look at the numbers seem. That said, it's more the back end of the top 100 that has more of the pitching.
Yeah, you know, and I don't think it's an absence of high-end arms. I think there's a couple things at play. I actually noticed this. I noticed our end-of-season list from 16 was short on pitchers at the top two when I was doing a story on guys who might emerge as the top 10 prospects at the end of the 2017 season. And I think one, there's an outstanding crop of young hitters, and I think when everything is equal, or if you consider two prospects kind of roughly the same caliber, I know my tendency is I will tend to give the nod to the hitter just because of that attrition I was talking about earlier. I also think the last year's draft was outstanding in terms of left-handed pitchers with guys like A.J. Puck and Braxton Garrett and Jason Groom was the number one ranked prospect on our draft list. I think it could look different when some of these hitters graduate to the big league. I just think it's kind of a cyclical thing. And like John said, I mean, there's still plenty of outstanding pitchers, you know, near this list. They just aren't all up at the top of the list like they might have been in past years. I think it's more of a testament to the quality of position player talent that's out there right now than a great shortage of pitching.
All right, let's talk about tools a little bit as far as this top 100 goes, and we'll do hitter, position players, and pitchers as well. Maybe I go through here alternating through the tools, and you guys can tell me who you think best for each, and you guys can alternate. Let's start with position players. Of this top 100 right now, who's got the best power, Jonathan?
Well, it's got to be Cody Bellinger, right, Jim? I mean, I think...
Yeah. Earlier in the podcast, I thought he was the best power prospect.
Yeah, so, well, I'm agreeing with you, which is rare.
I appreciate that, yes.
Yeah, I'm here for you. I think it's not the, you know, wow, raw power that maybe we saw from Joey Gallo. And I think I said as much in one of our segments that we all recorded last week. But he is a better bet just because the hit tool is so good to tap into the power. I mean, I saw him hit a ball. I don't know what the distance was on the homer in the Fall Stars game, but he went a long way. And he just really backspins the ball extremely well, turns on pitches, but he has the ability to hit the ball out to all fields too. So, you know, and we put a 65 grade on his power. And I think he could reach that, especially because he's not, you know, fully physically matured yet. So I think he's going to get to that power fairly easily.
Jim, how about average? Who's the best hitter? It's not power, but best overall hitter.
I think it's got to be Andrew Benintendi. I mean, there's a number of interesting candidates. I mean, we're talking about a guy who statistically, you know, 313 is pro debut, 312 in the minors, 295 in the big leagues, hit better than that in the obviously small sample size in the division series. He just got such a good left-handed swing. He sees pitches well. He manages the strike zone well. I mean, he's got power to go with it, too. And you know, we were raving about him earlier. Obviously, he's our number one overall prospect on the list. I think he's the standout. Now, he's gonna graduate you know, pretty quickly, like you alluded to, Tim. And when he does, I think a year from now, we might be talking about two guys from last year's draft, and Mickey Moniak and Nick Senzel, who were the top two picks, might be the top two hitters when we have this discussion a year from now.
All right, fielding, Jonathan. You can't say Cody Bellinger.
No, I'm not going to say Cody Bellinger, although Jim has already lauded his defense at first. I think it depends on what direction you want to go with. But we'll stay if we want to say it's going to be an up-the-middle guy, and we'll go with Manuel Margot. You know, with the Padres, I think people saw him play defense in the Futures game, and he does that kind of thing all of the time. Plus, he's got a good arm. He's got really good speed, good jumps and reads out in center field. And he's a good all-around player to boot. But if we're just talking pure fielding, then I probably would give Margot a slight edge over a couple of other candidates.
So if Margot has a good arm, Jim, who has the best arm?
Well, I think that one's pretty easy. I think it's Matt Chapman who just snuck onto the list. And, you know, Chapman's a guy who's always been noted for his strong arm, never pitched at Cal State Fullerton, but Team USA put him on the mound kind of for two innings one summer, and he threw 98 miles an hour. So, I mean, he has an absolute cannon. It's you know, if you're looking around the diamond, you know, catching wise, it might be Jorge Alfaro. You know, outfield wise, it might be Alex Verdugo with the Dodgers. But Chapman, you know, it's funny. I mean, he's never really pitched a lot. I was talking to this about this at the Rookie Career Development Program, but he has a cannon, and he's also, you know, he'd be on that short list of best defensive prospects too. I mean, he's not just an arm at third. I mean, he's got good range, good hands. He's another potential Gold Glover.
There's a lot of good speed near the top of this top 100 list. I'm not sure where you weigh in, Jonathan, on who is the fastest player overall.
I think it's got to be Jorge Mateo, just in terms of pure speed. I don't think there's much question about that. You know, he's an 80 on the scale, 20 to 80 scouting scale. He can flat out steal bases. You know, he had some issues from a disciplinary standpoint last year, complained about not being promoted, got suspended. He missed the Futures game as a result, but that didn't slow him down any. He is incredibly fast. I think the only question is what position he ends up playing. He was a shortstop. He was the one that moved to second when the Yankees got Gleyber Torres. Tells us something about Gleyber Torres. I could see Mateo ending up out in the outfield because of that speed. So, but I think he is clearly the guy with the most pure speed on the list.
All right, switching over to the pitchers, and Jim, you can go first here. Who's got the best fastball?
I think that would be Michael Kopech with the White Sox, who was part of the Chris Sale trade. And I'm not basing that on the reported 105 miles an hour that he may or may not have hit last summer when he was pitching the minors. And there's this kind of goofy video of him taking like a crow hop off the mound and throwing 110 into a net recently. That video has made its way around the Internet. But gimmicks aside, like you can see this guy, you know, I saw him repeatedly in the Arizona Fall League sit at 98 miles an hour with a fastball. He's a legitimate triple-digit fastball. It's got late life on it, too, which makes it tougher. And, you know, once Kopech gets a little bit better in terms of polish and adds some control and command, he's going to move very, very quickly through the White Sox organization.
Jonathan, who's got the best curve?
There's some good breaking balls. I think it's still Lucas Giolito. You know, again, I sort of hinted that people said that his star has faded a little bit. I don't think it has so much. I think he's going to get back to who he was. And even in the minors this last year, he pitched well. And up in the big leagues, he struggled. We don't need to get into why. But he still has an unbelievable, you know, the true overhand 12 to 6 curveball. When he's throwing it right, it's unhittable, even if you know it's coming.
All right, slider, back to you, Jim.
I'm going to go with Josh Hader of the Brewers. I just think, you know, he just destroys left-handers. He's a left-handed pitcher, obviously. And he throws it from a low slot, and he throws it hard, and it sweeps across the plate, and he lines up on the first base side of the rubber. I think if you're a left-handed hitter watching that slider, I think it just seems like it comes out of nowhere and then darts across the plate, and it's good against right-handers too. I mean, he could backfoot it against right-handers as well. I just think that the quality of the pitch and the angle he delivers it from make it very, very difficult to pick up.
Back to Jonathan. We're almost to the end here. Change up, Jonathan.
Yeah, that's going to be Luke Weaver of the Cardinals. And there were a few really good change-ups. I think it'd be him or Jose De Leon, now with the Rays. Friend of the podcast, Jose De Leon. But Weaver's change-up is so nasty, and he really believes in it. It is his go-to pitch. It's his out pitch, especially because his breaking ball is – is fringy at best. And that, you know, is the one thing that I think he needs to refine a little bit to have sustained success at the big league level. But just the fastball, which he can get up to, you know, 94, 95, even touch a 96, and the changeup combined should make him effective, even if he's like a back-end starter. And if you look, I mean, you know, the Cardinals have had guys like that. I mean, Michael Wacha is kind of a two-pitch guy, and he had some success as well. I think Weaver could do so as well, especially because that changeup is so, so good.
And then finally, Jim, which of the pitchers on this list has the best control?
I think you have Mitch Keller's the guy I'd go with. He had the sixth best strikeout to walk ratio in the minors last year, and it's not just throwing strikes. I mean, he misses bats too. Good fastball, curveball's chance to be a plus pitch. You know, I think he's really narrowed the gap. I mean, Tyler Glasnow has been the best pitching prospect in that Pirate system for a while, but Mitch Keller's pretty close to him, and I think there's some people who may even take Mitch Keller. It'd be an interesting conversation because Glasnow has more pure stuff, but lacks Keller's polish despite being more experienced.
All right, great stuff. Hey, this has been a good breakdown of that top 100 list, and I'm sure the conversations will continue on MLBpipeline.com. And stay tuned in there because up next, the big unveil will be the top 30 list for every team around the league. So 900 more players coming up on MLBpipeline.com, ranked 30 to number one in each organization. For Jim Callison, Jonathan Mayo, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for tuning in to the Pipeline Podcast.